So continuing with offering respects to Prasadam. In his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila 1120 purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Mahaprasad is non-different from Krishna. Therefore, instead of eating Mahaprasad, one should honor it. It is said here, Korila Bandan, Haridas Thakur, offered prayers. When taking Mahaprasad, one should not consider the food ordinary preparations. Prasad means favor. One should consider Mahaprasad a favor of Krishna. Before beginning a meal, before beginning a meal, you should glance over the prasad and pay your respects to it, remembering that it is the mercy of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes, no one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or speak or eat or speak. And by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by the devotee is beyond the principle of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. You should glorify the Lord's prasad by chanting the following prayers. Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave Swalpa Punya Vatam Rajan Vishvaso Naiva Jayate. O King, for those with little pious credit, faith in Mahaprasad, Sri Govinda, the holy name, and the Vaishnavs never arises. Prasad Seva. Sridha Abhijajal Johendriya Tahikal Jive Fele Vishaya Sagare Taramadhye Jivayati Lobamoy Sudurmati Take Jeta Katina Samsare Krishna Borodoyamoy Koribare Jihujoy Swapashad Anadilobhai Se Anamrita Ka supposed to be Pau Radha Krishner Gunagao Premedako Chaitanyutai. O brothers, this material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or another, we have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment, and of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. It is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world, but you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and in love, call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. So the point being made here by Srila Prabhupada is offering respects to prasadam. It is not, we're not eating, we are honoring. So then, honoring means that it is service to the Lord to accept Him in this way. This is the principle. That it is service to the prasad by honoring it, by eating, by accepting it. So this means that we will appreciate the prasad, we will appreciate the fortune that we have in the mercy of Krishna. This is the meaning of prasad. So Prabhupada's pointing out that before eating, one should seek the Lord's permission to eat. So before eating, before speaking, before acting, then we take the Lord's permission. Because then whatever we do will be free from the four defects. Otherwise, if we act on our own, think that we are very expert, then it will have the defects. Something done seemingly materially imperfect, but done with the Lord's permission, does not have any material defect to it. And something that is done seemingly materially perfect, but if it's not done for the Lord's pleasure, it actually is full of material mistakes. It has so many mistakes to it. The cheating propensity is there, illusion is there, so many different aspects are there. So this we must be very careful to avoid. Otherwise, what we find is, in the beginning, we're very sincere. We pray because we feel unconfident to do something. Then the Lord gives His mercy. He gives His permission. Then we do it. Then, because there's no, it is not, how do you say? the four defects are not present, then it becomes appreciated. Devotees think this is very nice. Then, with time, we have to be very careful. We don't think, yes, I have done this. Then we stop taking the Lord's permission because now we're not feeling afraid, right? It means one, if one is anxiety, right? The artarti is the one who's anxiety, right? The artarti means we're in anxiety. And then, there's arti. Arti is anxiety. And artarti is wants the money. He wants arta. Okay. So the arti means he has some difficulty and he wants the Lord to remove that difficulty. So we turn to the Lord, and in this condition, then we take his permission. But then, if we find that having done that, then after a while, then we get confident in what we're doing. Then we think, I am doing it, and we stop taking the Lord's permission. Then even though it may appear to be materially perfect, it actually has these four defects that are typical. The typical defects of the, like I said, Prabhupada says, the principle of the four defects, typical of the conditioned soul. So one has to be very careful. And then from that, then we find our subtle desires start to become gross, and then we fall prey to very basic fundamental principles of you know, material life. So sometimes it is asked, well, how is it that someone who is a leading devotee, advanced, can fall from the position? Because advanced means it won't fall, right? Means in the Western concept, something that is absolute means it's 100% perfect, can have no defect. It never had, never, it doesn't now, and never will. So then we run into a problem with this definition because it doesn't explain the actual condition of the conditioned soul trying to become perfect. In other words, because it is a material concept, it itself already is imbued with these typical defects. Because Krishna in the Gita says in the material world, every action is covered by fault. But somehow or another, we have a definition that it will never have any fault. It means it will be materially perfect. It's because of our faith in the material world. So the actual principle is, when it's done for Krishna, then it's perfect. And if it's not done for Krishna, it can never be perfect. So, being done for Krishna, even though there may be seeming defects, it is still perfect. The example is given of the Ganga water. That sometimes we find mud and bubbles, especially in the rainy season. You see, the Ganga water is not clear at all. It's the same color as mud. And you have so many, it's not just a little bubbles. You actually have big clumps, like piles of like foam. Sometimes there'll be, you know, sometimes, you know, 1 foot around, or sometimes 1 foot by 2 foot, or sometimes even bigger. And there'll be, you know, 6 inches, a foot high. Just all this kind of bubbles that comes from the Ganga itself. And it will float down, especially on the sides. The current will push it around. Like this. And so normally, if you see water that has bubbles in it, that water is bad. Like if you leave water in a small pond or in a glass or something, after a while it gets bubbles in it and goes all funny. So this kind of water cannot be used for puja, it shouldn't be taken, it's unhealthy, impure. But the Ganga is always pure, even though it may appear, the mud is there, it has this foam, like that. You just don't take the foam, you don't take your lota and fill it up with foam and like that. You just move that aside, or it passes anyway. As the current goes, it's not constant. You get some here and there. Then you take the water, and it is pure. So in the same way, our activities must be pure in this way by being done for Krishna. So you must take his permission. So in other words, if the devotee makes the mistake and is not taking the Lord's permission, you know, either by constant surrendered to the Lord, so whatever you do is already for the Lord. Or, for each activity, then one takes that permission. Like that. Then if one forgets to do this, and one becomes confident oneself, then we see that the Lord will start to take away those abilities. Or not necessarily take away. I think Srila Prabhupada mentions, once Krishna gives someone an ability, that remains. We generally see that. We see many times devotees who have been, they have not been very active for many, many years. Somebody hasn't seen him for 10 years, but they come back, and that quality that they had before, they were very expert at kirtan or at lecturing or something, that quality remains. I've had many devotees comment, when they have these big reunions, Prabhupada's disciple reunions, and someone comes, and before they were an excellent lecturer, they would come back and they would speak on Prabhupada, they would still give excellent lecture. Other things may not be so good, but that would still be good. Because Krishna gave them that ability. Or someone is able to lead kirtan, they still lead very nice kirtan. Like this. Because Krishna gave that ability. But, because they may have forgotten that Krishna gave them that ability, then we find, we think we're the doer. And then from that, then material desire comes up. Subtle desire turns into gross. And then we are faced with a difficult situation or a compromising situation. So this point is there for everyone, whether we're new or whether we're very advanced. The principle remains, though there may be some change in the, there would be a deepening of the understanding, a deepening of the surrender. It means the new devotee will surrender to Krishna only when he has the anxiety. But as he advances, then he'll always be, even though there's no anxiety. But he knows that I can only do these things by Krishna's grace. So he's always surrendered. Okay. So this is an important point. Then, honoring the Prasad, we understand that, so in other words, those with little swalpa punya, those who only have a small amount of punya, or here, little punya, meaning basically none, then they cannot get faith in Mahaprasad, they cannot get faith in Govinda, in the holy name, in the Vaishnavas. It just doesn't happen, because their punya is too less. So if one is always seeing Mahaprasad, he's just seeing, oh, it's not cooked properly, not this, it's not that, so many things. One can never actually see it as Krishna's prasadam, as his favor. That just means that we have less piety, that's all. The heart is very dirty, and the piety is less. So, therefore, if we find that difficulty, then we should be very conscious of this and try to take the Lord's permission and to gain this understanding, gain this faith. You know, we should pray to the Lord. Then, other point being made in the Sarira Vijayajal is that the tongue is the central item, that if it is controlled, everything else can be controlled. As we see that Rupa Goswami opens the Upadeshamrita, saying that one who can control the pushings of the anger, of the mind, of the tongue, of the belly, of the genitals, then that person, of the words, that person then is qualified to preach all over the world. Like that. So now, Prabhupada points out in the purport that the tongue is the central pivot of all these activities. By speaking, if one speaks prajalpa, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is crazy, we have so many desires. And because we cannot fulfill these desires, we become angry. So if we can control the speaking so we don't talk nonsense, then the mind and the anger is automatically controlled. Anger comes after frustration. We have desire. So if we have no desire, we're peaceful. So we can only have no desire if we talk about Krishna. Then, the tongue, when it tastes, if it gets too over enthusiastic to taste, then we will put too much then in the stomach, and the stomach will get used to being packed, you know, very tightly. And so then, when the stomach gets too overloaded, then that creates lust. You know, that's why it says eating, sleeping, mating, defending. You eat so much, you get tired. Then you sleep, and then you get so much energy, and then one has so much material desire. So like that, one has to control the tongue. So if one can control the tongue to speak about Krishna and to taste, then one can advance very nicely. One becomes very qualified to preach. And of these two, then it's very difficult to control the eating. Especially in the beginning, talk anyway is going to be this, that. But you can control the tongue, the tasting. So the tongue is very important to control. Okay, so it mentions that, that we should take this prasad and in love call for the help of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, full satisfaction and glorify your lordship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and in love call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So it's most voracious and uncontrollable. So voracious, by taking prasad, we control that side. And by remembering Radha and Krishna and calling for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's help, then it becomes controlled. So that's the whole idea, is that while we're taking prasad, we should be discussing about Krishna. Or, you know, light topics, nothing heavy, nothing unpalatable. We discussed this before, is that conversations for prasad should be very light. We should not be discussing issues or, you know, very serious things. Conversation at prasadam should be very light or none at all, like that. It should not be something that will disturb the atmosphere. Because the atmosphere is disturbed, we get an anxiety, and anxiety is one of the causes for ill health. Also, for an anxiety, you have a tendency to eat more, and that also is a cause of bad health. It's another aspect of serving we didn't mention before, is that the serving has to be very nice. The servers must create an atmosphere, a pleasant atmosphere, where the devotees feel they will be fed properly. They will get enough prasadam. Whatever's there will be served properly. Because if not, you get an anxiety. If you're an anxiety that you're not going to get, even you get enough, you still want more. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Maybe you just take, if you know there's enough, you just take a little, how much you want. If you think there's not enough, then whatever you can get, you'll just take, just to get it. Because there is a mentality or an atmosphere that there's a shortage, or it won't be distributed, or just, you know, bad organization. So then the tendency is to take more than what you need. You know, the animal instincts of survival come up, and one collects more than required, like that. So one has to be very careful. The servers themselves can very much influence, you know, the mentality and the health of the devotees in the temple based on their expertise or lack of it in serving. They're very expert in serving, then prasadam becomes a very nice experience for devotees. They find satisfaction, there's good association with devotees, the senses, the mind, everything is satisfied. It makes all the rest of their service much easier. Because his point is that one can tolerate all kinds of disturbances out in the field. But when one comes to one's own place, you know, where one identifies, this is where I stay, I live, these are my association. If in that atmosphere there's anxiety, then it's a great disturbance. So we cannot underestimate how much benefit it adds to the devotional atmosphere and the association of devotees properly served prasadam, and how much it affects devotees if it's not. Like that. You'll generally see if the prasadam is not properly served, is the atmosphere is not good, the cooks and everybody don't take proper care to see that whatever they cook is nice, doesn't mean opulent, but just nice, edible, pleasant, then what will happen is that one will look for emotional, sensual support somewhere else. And so that generally means outside the temple, outside the association of devotees, because one's not finding it in the association of devotees. Right? So this kind of thing is, it has its effect. It's very subtle, maybe very long term, but it has a very deep effect like that. It's very rare I've gone to any place where I've found that the devotees are actually peaceful and quiet and satisfied when they take prasad like that. Very rare I've ever gone to a temple where I found it, because no one knows how to serve. Like that. No one knows how to serve like that. And because of this, devotees just kind of come together to eat because you got to eat, and then rush off quickly, and there's no, it's a time for devotees to sit, do things together. Bhunkte bo jayate, taking prasad together with the devotees, giving prasad, receiving prasad. This is one of the two of the six ways. It means one third of association of devotees is dependent upon on prasadam. And so that is not existing practically in most places wherever I've seen. So that cuts down, so that leaves you two-thirds. Then there's guhya makiti prichati. Then it's a matter of devotees intimately associate with each other, take advantage of discussing topics amongst each other. And many times you don't see that's very strong either. So that kind of like, you know, maybe with their Guru Maharaj they have that, or maybe with one devotee here or there, but it's not a general principle. Devotees feel they can sit together, discuss things and all that. You know, they either don't have time, or don't have interest, or, you know, whatever. So many reasons. And then, so that cuts out another third. So that leaves, what is it? Didati pratigrinati, giving gifts, accepting gifts. So that also is not a well-known Western phenomena, except on Christmas or on birthdays. So when you remove Christmas and birthdays, then it kind of like doesn't happen, you know. So it very much limits association of devotees, because these are the platforms in which one associates and does things and all that kind of stuff. So one should understand the importance of prasadam. We see Prabhupada introduces immediately, you know, as soon as there were devotees or a place, then there was prasadam. Like that. It was, you know, because Prabhupada mentions that it's, you know, if nothing else, someone can relate to prasad. That's it. You can have compassion on other living entities by distributing prasad. Someone may not understand the philosophy, may not, but, you know, prasadam is nice, the devotees serve nicely, that reciprocation is nice. Then, you know, I think even in the West, there's, I don't know if it's an American saying or what. They use it in many things, but one of the ones they use it in is the family that eats together stays together, right? Because that's bhunkte bhojayate. They sit together, they have the meal, they have their talks. But as soon as it's, you know, mother does this, father does that, the kids go out wherever where they go, and nobody eats together, you see the house falls apart like that. So the prasad brings everybody together. Okay. Okay. Yeah, okay. And another thing, on this point we touched on it. These are some different rules for eating and drinking water. When two or more persons are honoring prasad together, they should not discuss material affairs. Any discussion should consist of light conversation relating to Krishna consciousness or glorifying the prasad. If the devotees are attentive, one devotee who is not eating may read aloud from the shastra during the meal. While eating or drinking, do not make disturbing noises or find fault with the taste of the prasad. So, yeah, one should not make all kinds of sounds. One should avoid the the what do you call it? The Goshala, you know, syndrome, like that, you know. There's all those rules your mother taught you, you know, eat with your mouth closed and all those kind of things and that, you know. And a read aloud from the Shastras, we mentioned before, is if the devotees can be very attentive on that, that's good. If not, then also you can play some tape, if something, you know, like Prabhupada's tapes or something that is specifically very Krishna conscious. You wouldn't necessarily pay some of the, you know, hard rock or, you know, stuff that is meant for radios and karmi programs at Prashad, unless you have a cast iron stomach. But one should be very, in other words, the atmosphere should be very pleasant and very Krishna conscious. The association between the devotees should be very, very nice. So is there any questions on this part of it? No? Okay. Then a few more, you know, various... Huh? Yes.
The point before when it was about ability.
Ability, yes.
The first one, you said that, more like when the neophyte stage, you tend to ask Krishna for help, whatever services you're doing. And then after, when you thank for that, you give us that ability, you tend to forget. You said that stuff in his eyes manifest, and then grows. Could you just describe a little bit more about the subtle and
how subtle comes to grow?
And what type of subtle?
Means the principles, the principle of how things work in the material world is everything starts from subtle, goes to gross. There's nothing that doesn't work like that. We see the creation starts from the subtlest aspects. You know, you start with false ego, and then from that, then it comes down to intelligence, then the mind, then the senses, then the, you know, the air, the ether, the, what do you call it? Ether, air, fire, water, and earth. So they're successfully getting gross. And we see the senses then, they also manifest with those elephants. I mean, elephants. Yes. As the elephants manifest, then all these senses, elements, excuse me. That's why one should think and speak. There should be some connection. Otherwise, if one's thinking of too many things, then... Okay. So, yes. So... Now, the question is whether it was African elephants or Indian elephants. And of Indian elephants, does that mean the North Indian elephants or the South Indian? Because the North Indian have a bigger head, they have more brain. But the South Indian ones, they have a more beautiful face like that. So now, which of these elephants, then, are these senses manifesting from? This is the question. So we see that the hearing, which is the most essential, then manifests from the ether. Then from the air comes the touch. Then from the water comes taste. From the fire comes form. And from the earth comes smell. Like that. So we see that it all comes down like this, from subtle to gross. So then in also how things work with the mind, first is the subtle. We think. Right? We think something. Some desire comes up. We think about it. But either it's, you know, either not, it doesn't apply to the situation, or it's something unattainable, or it's something we don't want to attain, like this. So it may stop at this point. Right? But then, if we decide, no, this is a good idea, then it moves to the feeling stage. Then we actually seriously think about it. You know, that yes, I want this. We become attached to it. In the thinking stage, one, the attachment can go. It will come up. We may get attached. We may not. If we don't get attached, it'll go. If we get attached, it goes to feeling. Feeling means we want it. And then we start to move in that, how to get it. And then willing means now we are actively trying to pursue getting that desire. So we see it always goes from subtle to gross. So as we purify ourselves, then the gross anarthas and all that get removed. The subtle may remain. Right? We overcome the you know, we're able to follow the four regulative principles. So then that gets established. But then we find with time, still what is left is subtle. We may get, means distinction, adoration, profit, these kind of things remain. So now if we're not careful, then these subtle again turn back into gross. Right? Distinction, adoration, profit means people have to see, you know, praise you, they have to come to you, they have to give you things, they have to honor you. So that means that besides the subtle, the gross has to start manifesting. Right? Like that. So then that idea is that we have these distinction, adoration, so we think we're special. So that means we're, you know, we're expert, we're something. So then we become attached. We become, the senses are there, and then that just eventually just falls down again into sense gratification. Right? So one has to be very, very careful to see. Because these are Maya's tricks. That's her business. She's got so many tricks. Like Prabhupada says, the end of the line is the yogi or that then sees the Paramatma. And then after seeing the Paramatma, he thinks this is me. So he thinks, I am God. So that's a final snare. The yogi, by his practice, personally saw the Lord face to face. All he has to do now is just that, take a moment and surrender. And then he's attained perfection. He's a moment away from perfection. All he has to do is surrender to the Lord and take up devotional service. And his yoga practice is perfected. But at that point, she just throws in the point, that is you. So you are God. And then he thinks, I am God, so he doesn't surrender to Krishna. So then he thinks, this is me. And then like this, then slowly, slowly, the settle turns back into gross. They open some hospitals, this, that, and people praise them. And after a while, then it just gets down to, you know, gross activities. So this is the material nature. She has all these things. So we have to be very, very serious to want to overcome them. Otherwise, there'll be problems. Okay? Right? And she's got tricks up to the platform of prema. Like that. So we may have whatever ideas we may have about, well, senior devotees may not fall, but if that was true, then why in the Bhagavatam Bharat Maharaj fell? Right? Why is that story in the Bhagavatam? That's to show us that there are obstacles. Means a neophyte devotee, a new devotee, would not even get near that. Means that obstacle that's put, right? Just like a, you know, man off the street, right? He's not going to have problem with seeing the super soul and thinking that he's that super soul, right? That's only for super highly qualified people, right? We understand? So there are tests that are there that Maya doesn't even bother with for smaller, you know, a lower level. Just like if you have a mosquito, you don't get out a cannon, right? You don't need a cannon to get rid of a mosquito. You understand? So Maya's not going to pull out her big tricks for someone who's not so advanced. She just uses small tricks. Like that. You know, a temple commander comes up and says, hey, you gotta clean here. Why I gotta clean here? And then, you know, like that. I'm not staying around here. That's all it took to get him out the door. Just someone asked him to, you know, wash the pots or something. You know, that was it. You know, like that big, big intellectual scholar that came to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He just told him, oh, you want to discuss philosophy, you know, so you go down to the Goshal, and you go speak to this devotee. So he went looking for this devotee, asking everyone, where is this devotee? So they point, oh, he's over there at the Goshal. So he thought maybe, big, you know, because also, you know, scholars like to go see the cows and feed the cows, and, you know, it's a very pious Indian thing to do. So then he went down to the Goshala, and he got there and he saw some, you know, nicer looking devotees and asked them, you know, where's this devotee? And they point, oh, over here. And then they called this devotee. And this devotee was basically covered from head to foot with cow dung, because his service was cleaning the Goshala. So he would be shoveling all the cow dung and cleaning and all this. So when the scholar saw this, that I'm going to have to discuss philosophy with this person, he got upset. He left. Because he was thinking, you know, scholar must mean somebody who is, you know, has a particular physical look, and, you know, they sit, they would never shovel cow dung. You know, that's for, you know, people who are not intellectual. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's point was, is this boy, because he does service, he realizes the philosophy. Therefore, you want to get real benefit, you speak to him. But he could not. He could not accept this. So that's all it took. Maya only had to have him go down to the Goshala to speak to somebody at the Goshala, and that was it. You know, devotional service finished. So she doesn't need to use big tricks. She uses the big tricks on the advanced devotees. So therefore, one should be very, very careful in criticizing devotees, you know, that they may fall. Because what they're falling for is many times more, or the cause of it, means what the actual fall may be something gross, but where it originated from was something more subtle and something more difficult. So one has to be very, very, one must understand this, is that the Maya's tests are always there. That's her business, to always test. So we must be, it is our business to always see that we avoid any of these problems. Okay. Then, continue with various, you know, rules. Then, use only the five fingers of the right hand to touch and place food in the mouth. Eating with the fingers is recommended because the digestive process begins with the sensation of food touching the fingers. Yes.
Should you eat like this? Or?
Some people will not put their index finger in the mouth, but I don't think it's that important, you know? Like that. You'll see some do that. You know, I've seen many, many people, especially from, you know, I've seen many from aristocratic families and that. They don't use, because one, all the fingers don't fit so well in the mouth. So you've got to, you know, like that. Have you heard, I mean, or anything? I think it's just individual. All five fingers are okay for eating.
The thing, like in Western temples, it's kind of a must.
That you don't use this finger.
Yeah.
That would be. I guess it would be the same thing as why, if you go to England, those who are not necessarily aristocracy, they must stick out the little finger when they drink the tea, very straight. But those from the aristocracy don't necessarily stick the little finger out. Maybe because the teacup is small, you can only grab it with so many fingers, the little finger gets left. But it is not, you know, very pronounced in way stuck out like that. Huh? So like that is that in India some will do or not do, but it's not like if you put that finger in the mouth there's a big problem. But otherwise, that has been something that someone can focus on, and it has become one of the strict rules in the, you know, the Western book of rules, you know, of rituals, you know, like you have the ritual of the argue water. It means afterwards, it must be sprinkled on from the back of the head, like that. Must. You cannot sprinkle it from the front. Like you see in India, they just take the water from the altar and throw it on all the devotees. But in the West, you can't do that. You have to walk around behind the devotee and sprinkle it on the back of the head. See, now this is very important. I'll tell you why. One is that if you throw it from the front, the tendency is everyone will bow their head. So in the Western tradition, that's not a good thing. You know, you must walk straight and tall. That is considered good. So if we do it from the back, then you don't bend your head. not only that, you may not even know that they put it on your head. So in that way, you don't have to offer any respect at all. So like this, they develop these special rules, or the rule of the ritual of the lamp. See, every morning before Mangal Arati, then someone, depending upon who's there, they make a computer printout of the exact order of who will get the lamp when and how and all that. And then somebody who's good at, I don't know, who's the person in like rugby that holds the ball and gets and runs around everybody and keeps everybody away, you know? That's a, you know, that technique, they must take the lamp. Because they have to be able to go to the one person, and before anybody else touches it, they have to be able to move and everything and get to the next person on the computer printout, like this. And they must zigzag around the temple, like this, taking 5 minutes when, you know, in India you just start at one side and go to the other and you'd be finished in about 2 seconds. But here it must go all over the place. And then, when the brahmachari gives it to, he must take the lamp first before he gives it to the lady. And then he must somehow or another give it in such a way to not become, you know, he should not get cooties by touching the lamp when the lady at the same time touches it. Otherwise there may be an electrical current there. You know, the brahmachari will just go poof right there and be a little pile of ash like that. So these are all part of the very strict, you know, shastra of the Western rituals. Is that you must very pronouncedly stick the index finger out and eat it, and while eating.
I was sitting in Vrindavan restaurant, I was eating chips, a plate of chips. Huh. This one Russian lady came up to me and said, "Oh, you must stick your finger out."
Yeah, yeah, no, it's very pronounced in that side.
All the Russian devotees and all the South American boys playing a good food, they're all eating it.
Yeah. Means I've seen some aristocratic kind of, you know, gentlemen eat like that. But it's not specifically they're not doing it. You know, it's not that they can. It's just that, you know, they mix with all the fingers. They use all the fingers. It's only when they pick it up then they just, you know, I guess it's too much to get too many fingers for the mouth. You know, like that. Yes.
I've heard this thing about how much you should get.
Oh yes, this is another. This is, yes, this is very, very important. Is that according to also the what do you call it? The Paschatya Desh Pancharatra. Then if you only eat with the tips of the fingers, that is how a Brahmin eats. Then, what is it? Yeah, the second kshatriya is, I think, up to the second joint. The third vaishya is up to the third joint. You know, I mean, where the fingers meet the hand. And the shudra is with the whole hand. Like that. So now, if we reverse this logic, then the Brahmins then will be eating with just the tips of the fingers. So that means if you use a fork, which then puts it farther away from the hand, that is for the hamsas. And if you use chopsticks, which puts it even more far away, that's for the paramahamsas. Like this, then you can. This completes the. These are the hidden secrets of this particular ritual. Now it mentions in the shastra in the Ayurveda when the prasad touches the palm of the hand, because all the nerves are there, then the digestion starts to actually function. Like that. So you'll see is aristocratic Indians, Bengalis, this, that, when they mix the prasad, they'll use the whole hand. Like that. They don't use the whole hand to stick it in their mouth. That you can say, okay, yes, the shudras may, but even that they don't do. But the point is you pick it up with the tips of the fingers. But mixing, you can use the whole hand. Because the whole point is that the whole digestive process starts by seeing the prasad and it looks attractive. Then you have an interest to eat. Then smelling it has a nice fragrance. Then when you touch it, this is all part of the digestion. You know, the texture is right, everything like that. Plus, you're putting energy into the food when you're mixing it and all that. Then in the mouth, the chewing there, then the stomach. So the stomach is actually the fourth stage, like that. So you'll see, you don't get as much taste you know, add things that can be mixed, something that can't be, you know, mixed, something like, let's say, sweet rice or this or that, that, you know, eat it with the fingers is good, but if it's also taken with the spoon, you don't get that much more taste out of it. But you think like rice and vegetables like that, if you just pick some up on a spoon and eat it, you get a little bit of taste, but you don't get the full taste. If you take it and mix it very nicely, and the better you mix it, the more the taste comes, like that. You can try it. Just by mixing very, very nicely, you can add, you know, 30% to 50% more flavor to what you're eating. You can try it. It's a very tangible, you know, scientifically you can try it yourself. See, what happens is the tongue has places on the tongue that taste. It's not that the tongue, every place tastes everything. So if you don't mix it properly, see, if you mix it properly when it goes on the tongue, then all the different tastes get tasted by the tongue fully. You know, the bitter's here, this is there, the salty's there, and you get the full flavor at once. But if you don't, you pick up your spoon, you take some rice, you take some sabji, or you put some rice in your mouth, take some sabji, put in your mouth, then the rice will be on one side, sabji's on the other, and it may be that they're on the wrong part of the tongue. Right? The rice is sweet, it'll be on the, maybe on the salty part, and the salty thing's on the sweet part. So you get some flavor, but you don't get that much. So this is science. So like that. So these things are, you know, these things are known in India. So the point is the whole hand can be used for mixing, though you gently pick it up. There's some, I think some songs by the Alwars, where they're talking about the offering to the deity of pongal. Because pongal is a kind of khichdi. They don't put turmeric in it. It's rice and 1/4 mung dal. I think it's 1/4 or 1/5. It's a very small amount. And they chaunce it with black pepper and I think mustard seeds. No mustard seeds. They use mustard seeds? No, black pepper, some dal, and ghee. But they use a huge amount of ghee. It means you make the chaunce, and then afterwards you make another chaunce and just pour that on. Just ghee. And then you mix it. And it says the pongal is good, is while you're eating, the ghee is running down and dripping off your elbow. That means it has enough ghee in it. If it doesn't do that, the pongal is not good.
Pongal.
Huh? Pongal. Pongal, yes. Sorry. Okay.
Not to find fault with the child.
Yes, not to find fault.
Also, you're talking about they like popcorn and pizza.
Means while we're sitting in front of the prasad, we don't say anything. Afterwards, if it is our position, we can get something done. You know, we may go to the cook and say, you know, that popcorn and dal is not the most standard menu, neither in the Eastern world or in the Western world. So, I mean, no one eats popcorn and, you know, even if you consider dal soup, you don't eat popcorn in soup. You know, bread and soup maybe, or popcorn in a drink, something, but you don't take popcorn and soup and call that lunch. Nobody anywhere on the planet will do that. You know? Like that. Well, excuse me. There are a few people who will do that on the planet. Therefore, we're quoting the point. So like that. One has to, in other words, one doesn't say anything to the prasad while the prasad is there, you know? Like that. Yes.
On the same point, as you said, I mean, you're not supposed to say anything offense to the prasad. What if, like, you have potatoes and they're completely raw?
Something like that, it's uncooked. So that's not going to be, it's not that Krishna, I mean, it's, if it was offered with such devotion, then, you know, maybe that's one thing. But then they would taste nice, because Krishna would have eaten them. like that. So something like that, uncooked, you know, I mean the bay leaves, you know, the chilies, you know, tomato skins, and, you know, the little things like that. One takes those out, because that's just understood, one doesn't. But anything that is edible, then that could be like that. Also, better to take less of a preparation, and so one can taste it, you know. Just take a very small amount, and then if you like it, take more later, like that. Rather than take a whole bunch and then find you don't like it, and then you know, either throw it or just kind of grumble about it, like that. So the servers have to be very expert so they can serve many, many times small amounts. You know, so the devotees aren't obliged to just take more just because, you know, it's a matter of survival.
Okay.
Okay, I'm thinking we should maybe stop here. It'll get too late for the... what is it? Yeah, for the boat festival. So tomorrow we'll continue with some of these, like how to drink water and other things. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.